Savvy Women Wealth Management is an SEC-registered investment advisor, offering advisory services to clients who have engaged us in jurisdictions where we are properly licensed or exempt from licensure.
Welcome to the Savvy Women Show with Catherine Magana and me, Steve Wolf, of Savvy Women Wealth Management in Carlsbad, California. We've been having a lot of fun so far as we cruise into the third week of our show. In the first two aired shows, we've talked with Adri Miller-Heckman, a nationally renowned expert on women and investing, and Laura McGee, a divorce coach who also happens to be from Carlsbad, California. Now, I always have to say Carlsbad, California, because anyone who does not know about Carlsbad, California, thinks we're talking about the Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico, wherever that is.
Okay, that's past history. Today, we have two special guests with us. The first guest is Rebecca Cornea, a family law attorney with a very interesting past.
Ooh, a woman with a past. This should be very interesting.
Not the kind of past that you're probably thinking about, but definitely interesting.
Oh, that's too bad.
She's a graduate from the University of Chicago with honors, was Phi Beta Kappa, and then graduated from a little-known law school named Harvard.
Well, I'm hoping that as I'm sitting next to Rebecca, that through the magic of osmosis, some of that brain power will transfer over into my mind.
You remember the movie Frankenstein, right?
Oh, yeah, you're funny.
But seriously, Rebecca's going to talk about family law, and you have to hear what she's done before becoming a lawyer. Anyway, we're also going to visit later with Rachel Ivanovich, an enrolled agent with a company named Easy Life Management. She does tax preparation, tax representation, resolution, bookkeeping, and payroll services.
You know, Catherine, when I think of tax preparation, I don't know why Preparation H comes to my mind. But Rachel will be giving us some really great tax planning tips between now and the end of the year.
And I'm sure she appreciated that.
Well, yes. And so you won't have to use Preparation H when it comes time to do your taxes next year.
But right now, we thought we'd go over something that was near and dear to our hearts, and that's becoming more financially literate. We're going to discuss 10 ways to improve your financial and investing literacy. We cannot stress enough how important it is for everyone to know all financial related topics, whether you're talking about investing, saving, especially for college or real estate, insurance, annuities, tax planning, retirement planning, and being financially literate is critical.
Okay, so let's get started with the 10 tips to financial and investing literacy. Number one on the list is make a plan. We really stress having a financial plan because identifying your financial goals and objectives creates the blueprint of your financial plan. As many of you know, Catherine is a certified financial planner and spends a lot of time working with clients on their plans.
Yeah, financial planning is very near and dear to my heart. What a financial plan is, it's a lifestyle plan where we look at all aspects of your financial well-being. We factor in real estate, investable assets, businesses, we do Social Security planning, and we also do a little bit of tax planning as well as estate planning. So it's important that you have a better understanding of where you're at financially and putting your goals into perspective.
Okay, the second of the top 10 tips to improve your financial and investing literacy is know yourself. There are plenty of investing and trading approaches. You know, some people will advise you to use the technical approach to investing in stocks, where you just look at the price movement of a stock to determine whether to buy it, to hold it, or to sell it. Some advise a fundamental approach, where you take a look at the financial metrics of a company, you know, things like the balance sheet, dividends paid, earnings, cash flow, and price, among other metrics, to decide what to buy, sell, or hold. Some utilize stock options. Some want to use mutual funds for stocks and bonds. And some advise investing in commodities like gold and silver.
So all of these could be viable options, but again, know yourself. Be sure to consider your goals, your risk tolerance, and the time frame before you make an investment decision. The third tip is protect your assets. Understand your risk tolerance and use it to determine the size of the investments that you make.
All right. Tip number four of the 10 ways to improve your financial and investing literacy is analyze from the top down. Learn how to identify current market trends and the stocks following them. Some of it is simply paying attention to what's going on around you. I've got a great story about that very thing. About 7 or 8 years ago, my son Brian told me about this great new invention called the iPod. He said to me that it's one of the greatest inventions he had ever seen, and he was sure that Apple, the company, of course, who invented the iPod, was going to be a huge winner. Now, I have to tell you that I did not have the music collection that he did, and I was really happy that after records, reel-to-reel tapes, 8 tracks, cassettes, and then compact discs, I was really happy with my CD player that held 300 CDs on a great turntable. So, although I thought the iPod was interesting, I did not buy Apple. At the time, I think the stock was around, what, $10 or $15 a share. Well, if I'd been able to correctly identify that trend, I could have made a fortune. I could have been a contender. By the time I bought Apple, I think it was about $170 a share on its way to close to $700. But I'm sure there are tons of stories like that. I just look around at a Starbucks or a Chipotle or a Netflix, just to name a few.
Okay, the fifth tip on our list of 10 ways to improve your financial and investing literacy is to search for additional opportunities. We suggest you have a watch list of securities and invest in them when the criteria indicates the time is right. This requires a lot of discipline because you don't want to overpay for a company, and this may require you also talking with a financial advisor.
Number 6 on the list is get technical. After you've done your homework and all your research, but before you buy the security, be sure to review its past price performance and identify when you might want to get in and get out. I really think it's a good idea to know both the technical and the fundamental side of whatever you are buying before you pull the trigger to buy. That goes for a house you might want to purchase, or a commercial building, or gold, or corn futures, or whatever. Do your homework, know everything that you can, then make your decision to buy or not to buy, and if your decision is to buy, than to decide at what price makes sense.
Okay, the seventh tip is to manage and monitor your holdings. Use online tools to better understand your portfolio's exposure to different industries, regions, and sectors. It's vitally important to know whether the company you own is located in the United States or somewhere else in the world. And also, there's also rapidly changing industries such as technology. So you should know, have a good understanding of what type of investments that you have. And there are many types of portfolios filled with yesterday's technology heroes.
Well, you know, with managing and monitoring your portfolio, just remember what happened in the late 1990s with technology stocks. They were flying high, and I do mean high. Companies that had no earnings and probably never would ever have earnings were selling for outrageously high prices. Then in April of 2000, all that started crashing down. And the NASDAQ, which is where many of the technology stocks are traded, was at a high of about 4,500. Well, it went crashing down along with most tech stocks and got as low as somewhere around 1,500. Well, today, 14 years later, the NASDAQ is finally back to about 4,500.
That's a little depressing. It's taking that long. But here we are with tip number 8, and certainly one of the most important tips is to keep your emotions in check. A lot of money is lost or not made because people decide to use their hearts when they're racing against mock speed. So it's one of the things that we understand is human emotions are our number one enemy, and panic, fear, and greed are the worst emotions that you could have in making poor investment decisions.
Well, you know, we're going to do a future show that will go into depth as to how emotions play a huge part in investment decisions. And we're going to try to really dig into the differences between how men and women make investment choices. But let's go on to tip number 9, and that is practice first. Test your investing plan and new trading strategies until you're comfortable. Don't go out and take all your money and invest it in your newfound trading platform. Invest just a little bit at a time and see how it works. So if you're comfortable with the amount of risk you're taking, slow down. There's no real hurry.
And finally, the 10th tip to improve your financial investing literacy is to commit to learning. We cannot stress this enough. Learn, learn, learn. Knowledge is power. It doesn't mean you need to be an expert in all the areas that you study, but it does mean you need to have a familiarity with all the topics that you do look at. You should feel comfortable enough with the investments that you make with the help of a trusted advisor. So we hope you found those 10 tips helpful, and please feel free to give us a call at 760-692-5700 if you have any additional questions or comments. You can also reach us on our website at savvyup.com, and that's savvyup.com for additional information. So coming up next, we have Rebecca Cornia joining us to talk about family law and some issues that women face when going through a divorce. And stay tuned. We also have Rachel Ivanovich, who's actually been an enrolled agent and is going to share with us what that means to you. So there's no doubt about it. You want to be here when these ladies talk to us. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. And as we like to say, savvy up.
Hi there. My name is Laura McGee. I'm a mediator and a divorce coach. One of the aspects of my work is helping women rebuild their lives after divorce. So listen up, ladies. Some of you are really good at investing and handling financial matters. Others, well, maybe not so good. It doesn't really matter. Savvy Women Wealth Management wants you. Do you want to have fun while learning? Do you want to be in control of your finances, more educated, empowered, and confident? Then you need to be part of the Savvy Women Club. Never heard of the Savvy Women Club? Well, that's okay. That's why I'm here. I'm letting you in on a little secret. We're not the same as the guys. How we feel about money and investing, who we want to work with, sets us apart. The club takes place in a really cool, non-threatening, fun atmosphere. So I want you to check out their upcoming events at SavvyUp.com or call 760-692-5700 and ask about becoming a Savvy Women Club member. That's SavvyUp.com or 760-692-5700. So go ahead, ladies. Take charge of your life. And savvy up!
As Mr. Obvious might say, women and men are different. We are different all the way from the hormones we have flowing through our bodies to the way we process information. For years, the financial industry was very male-dominated and male-centric. It was run by men who educated other men in the style of the way men learn. But things have changed. Many women have now entered the financial arena, and many other women are looking to learn more about finances and investing. We at Savvy Women Wealth Management believe that the process of education should be tailored to the student. That's why we have developed two workshops, Savvy Women Invest on Purpose and Becoming a Seriously Savvy Woman. We believe these events are tailored more toward the way women learn. They are limited in size, so the atmosphere is a little more intimate, a little more inviting, and a lot more fun. If interested, check out our event schedule at SavvyUp.com or call us at 760-692-5700. That's SavvyUp.com or 760-692-5700. Savvy Up!
Welcome back to the Savvy Women Show. I'm Steve Wolf, and I'm here with Catherine Magana, and we are with Savvy Women Wealth Management. And today in the studio, we have Rebecca Cornea, who is a family law attorney. And we're glad to have you with us.
Hi, Steve. Catherine, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Well, welcome. And we're really glad you're able to join us. And so tell us a little bit about your background and how you became a family law attorney.
I actually started out working with large corporations on environmental insurance claims, big Superfund sites. And while it was intellectually stimulating, it wasn't the right fit for my personality. I segued into teaching, taught at USD's law school, and also at Chapman University Law School for a few years. From that, I got interested in issues surrounding domestic violence. It's amazing to me what women can go through when they're in severely abusive relationships and how resilient and strong they are to survive under circumstances that many of us couldn't contemplate.
Did your teaching bring you into that?
Actually, it did. I got assigned to teach a criminal law class one semester because they didn't have an actual criminal law attorney to teach the class. And the battered woman syndrome was one of the defenses that I had to teach. The idea there is that someone who's been exposed to domestic violence can actually become mentally deficient and maybe shouldn't be held responsible for their criminal acts. Well, that's a great defense if you're in a criminal court. The problem is, you find after using this defense that these women then are in a situation where someone says, okay, you're mentally deficient, we're going to take your kids away. You're mentally deficient, we don't want to hire you. So it's what they call a double-edged sword. That got me interested in looking at what are appropriate responses to the domestic abuse that people sometimes face. And you find that people do things that don't make sense if you don't understand their circumstances, but that are completely logical and intelligent survival responses to the terrible situations they're living in.
Now, the name of your shelter, I think it was is what again?
I worked with Shelter from the Storm out in the Coachella Valley. I directed their legal clinic for 5 years. It's an amazing program. One of the challenges that faces a lot of women in domestic abuse situations is they don't have a support system to help them leave. They may be in a situation where they have no access to financial resources, no emotional support, they've lost ties with friends and family. Having a shelter system that gives them housing, job training, medical care, counseling, and legal assistance was an amazing opportunity for me to work with and did really great work for the women in need.
Is that at all depressing? Because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of good news in that.
To me, the inspiring thing is, as I said, to see how these women can flourish and blossom when they're given help. And one thing that we often don't think about is the majority of victims of domestic violence are actually children. For every woman who comes into a shelter, there are 2 to 3 children who come with her. And watching these children begin to grow and flourish after getting out of an abusive situation just warms the heart. And that really made it worth it.
So then, is that what got you into the family law side then, would you say? Or?
Yes, absolutely, Catherine. One of the things I realized through that experience was that I'm much more interested in relationships and in people than I am in large corporations with big budgets. You know, somebody has to work for those people, but it doesn't have to be me. And I really find that working with families in family law suits my personality. I think that, you know, I bring something to the clients because I do care about them as people, and I do have experience with a lot of different kinds of family types and family situations.
Well, it's interesting also your background. If you also saw a support system and what they need, that might help you guide those that maybe not be, they may not need the financial assistance, but they may need those other support systems that you talked about or learned about.
Absolutely. And, you know, nobody going through a divorce will tell you that it's easy. It's challenging for everybody, even in, you know, a what we would call a nice family or a normal family.
So you're in the family law business, correct? Is that a euphemism for divorce attorney?
A lot of what we do is divorces. We also handle child custody, support, things like that. A lot of us do premarital agreements and postmarital agreements as well.
So do you work mostly with women or families, or what do you find most of the clients you work with are?
About 60% of my clients are female, and obviously the other 40% are male.
And so with the woman that you've worked with, do you feel that they are prepared to meet with you, or what are some things that you think that they're not prepared for in meeting with you?
Well, one thing that I think is true of everybody, male and female, is most of us don't have a perfect understanding of our financial situations. Most of us operate in a lot of denial about our financial situations. And I notice that when we don't feel secure about our finances, many of us can operate from a sense of shame about that. So we don't want to look at it and we don't want to talk about it.
Well, I know my wife's been denying me finances for quite a long time.
Smart woman, huh, Steve?
So then I guess that leads to, do you find that some of the issues are financial issues then that lead them to you? Or
absolutely. Anybody who's going through a divorce has to think about their finances, because a major component of the divorce process is figuring out how we're going to split up the assets and the debts between the two parties in the marriage and who's going to pay support, how much support they're going to be.
So the biggest reasons that lead to divorce, what would you say those are?
Well, I think part of it is societal. We don't actually in the society put a premium on relationships. Our primary emphasis is on our jobs and on the acquisition of material things. That's how we judge success. Relationships take commitment and they take work. So many of us are pushed into a situation where something else has to come first, and unfortunately, we don't have the support we need for relationships. But I will say that financial stress is a major relationship killer. The fact that, you know, somebody can be struggling financially may feel a sense of shame about it. The other partner may feel a sense of blame. You have a perfect recipe for a relationship meltdown.
So do you think that a lot of the women out there are the ones who feel the shame?
I think it can be either one, but one thing I do tend to see is that women will often abdicate responsibility for financial decisions, believing that their partner is better equipped to make those decisions, and that's not always the case. I really think that a marriage is stronger when both parties are educated, knowledgeable, and participating in the financial life of the partnership.
Well, it's interesting because we see that, and obviously being an advocate for women and providing events for these different types of women, we want them to be educated before an event such as divorce or death come. And even it's what we find is some of the spouses and the husbands want their wives to learn. So I think there's been a shift. And in the past, a lot of men did oversee the finances, but we are seeing a lot more women in the workforce and a lot more women wanting to learn.
It seems to us, though, that the majority of couples that we see, the woman is not necessarily as prepared financially. Do you see that?
I do. I see that quite frequently. And when it comes to divorce, you really need to know what's going on with the finances. I would urge anybody who's contemplating a divorce to get as much information about the family finances, the other partner's job and earnings, all of that information as quickly as you can.
So if you were a woman who is thinking about getting a divorce, are there some steps that should be done before actually going through with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think collecting financial documents and financial information is really key. A lot of people are unaware of what kind of job benefits, retirement benefits, life insurance the other party may have. Getting copies of all those documents can really help you get a jump start on what the divorce process may look like for you. I think one thing is really important is to have realistic expectations when you go through a divorce. When you're taking one household and its income and dividing it into two, you're not going to be able to maintain the same standard of living in both households that you had in one household. Assets are going to be divided, debts are going to be divided too, which means that you may end up with some debt you didn't expect. So it's really important to get a sense of what your financial picture may look like after a divorce to be realistic about what you need, where you can downsize, what you're willing to give up. I think it's also really important for women especially to understand, what are my priorities? You know, is my main priority to make sure that I am able to keep the family home, that I have custody of my children? Those are all things you should think about in advance, because thinking about them when you're under the gun in a high-pressure situation isn't the best time to do that.
Do you help them with the priorities? Do you help them try to say, okay, this is more important than something else, or is that something you just listen to?
Well, obviously, you know, I'm an attorney, so I always have an opinion about everything, and I'm happy to share it if asked. But ultimately, it's the client's call.
So you mentioned a house, and that's obviously an important part for a lot of families, is looking at that asset. And what I've seen in the past is where we've had a woman that actually ended up receiving the home, but then a lot of equity was inside of the home, and there wasn't enough resources to live on. So sometimes you think, I want the house, but in actuality, it may not be the best financial decision, but it's more of that emotional tie. So it's really making sure that there's a clear understanding of what's happening and why. And I don't think some of those conversations, unfortunately, don't happen until after the settlements.
That's absolutely true. And I urge my clients to consult with a financial advisor for exactly that reason, because it's not enough just to get the asset. You also have to be able to maintain it.
So do you think a woman that's considering going through a divorce should look at mediation or a legal separation?
A legal separation is a technical term. It was devised for people whose religions forbid divorce. So it's basically the same process as a divorce. You just can't get remarried. It's very rarely an appropriate option for someone unless their religion forbids divorce. Mediation is a great tool. I think anybody who's in any kind of legal dispute should consider mediation. Where clients get confused is not understanding that mediation requires as much information as going to trial. If you don't know what would happen at trial, you can't mediate, because you don't know whether the offer you're getting is fair or reasonable. So you really have to do a lot of homework before you go to mediation. That said, yes, I think mediation is a great solution.
What do you think the advantages are of a premarital agreement? Because it seems to me that they are broken every time there's a divorce.
Well, you know, a good premarital agreement will hold up. A lot of times we don't hear about the premarital agreements that held up because nobody took them to trial. So people just followed them and we never hear about it. I think what premarital agreements do primarily is help the parties get their expectations in line. even if I want to challenge a premarital agreement, at least I start out knowing what the other side's position is going to be, and I have an understanding of what the parameters are within which a settlement might work.
Okay. Well, if somebody wanted to get hold of you, how do they contact you?
They can contact me through my website, www.rdcornia.com.
You want to spell that?
C-O-R-N-I-A. Or okay. They can give me a call at my office, 619-786-2832.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And we'll see you soon.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. So coming up next, we have Rachel Ivanovich from Easy Life Management, who's going to share with us what is an enrolled agent and provide us with some tax planning tips between now and the end of the year. So stay tuned and savvy up. Remember 1999? I do. I'm Catherine Magana from Savvy Woman Wealth Management. That was the year I started in the financial advice business. Let's see if you can guess when my partner, Steve Wolf, started.
Seems like yesterday, Catherine. The song was Venus, sung by Bananarama in 1986. We've gotten to know a lot of people over the years. Many of them have become clients and friends. We've gotten to know a lot of couples and tons of women.
That's right. And it's our job to know as much as we can about them in order to properly construct their financial plans. In many cases, we learn many intimate details about their lives.
It's been interesting to see the dynamics, especially between couples. Oftentimes, it's the woman who takes care of the bank book, but it's the man who makes all the investment decisions. And the wife tells us that that's okay because he is going to take care of things.
In all fairness, most of the husbands did a good job. But the problem is that women generally outlive the men. Plus, there's the potential for divorce, which could leave a woman on her own. We want her to be comfortable with investing. That's why we developed our Savvy Woman Invest on Purpose workshop. It's a place where women can get comfortable with investing in a fun, friendly environment.
You can sign up at SavvyUp.com or call us at 760-692-5700. And please understand, this first workshop is not an Investment 101 seminar. So sign up at SavvyUp.com.
No more than 10 women per workshop. So sign up now at SavvyUp.com or 760-692-5700 for the next Savvy Woman Invest on Purpose event. We know you're going to love it and really have fun. That's SavvyUp.com or 760-692-5700.
And you know, a lot of husbands are thrilled their wives are getting educated about investing. So whether you're married, widowed, or divorced, this is a great place to get started. We want you to get savvy, and while you're at it, really have a good time.
Savvy Up. Because it's
always a good time. Welcome back to the Savvy Women Show with Catherine Magana, my partner, and I'm Steve Wolf. And we have a guest here in the studio, Rachel Ivanovich of Easy Life Management, who's an enrolled agent. But before we get into that, we have to do one thing. We have to read a disclaimer because our attorneys tell us we have to. And we made this a little bit of a game. And so far, I believe that the top time for this is about 26 or 27 seconds. So you've got a lot, you know, to work for. So we're trying to see how fast you can do this, but still everybody can understand you. All right. So Rachel Ivanovich, get started whenever you're ready.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember, investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional.
Okay, we've got you at 35 seconds.
I think she beat me.
That's hard to read very quickly.
Yeah, the person we had last on one of the previous shows did it at about 27 seconds, I believe
That's
it was.
That's unbelievable.
All right.
Well, Rachel, we're so happy to have you with us today. Obviously, you've been recently married, so your new married name is Rachel Ivanovich, so congratulations
Thank
on
you so
that.
So
why don't you share with us a little bit about your background and why you're passionate about your career?
Well, Catherine and Steve, thank you so much for having me today.
You're welcome.
Well, my background, that's a good question. Where to begin? I had the opportunity to put myself through college and didn't have the money, so ended up in Europe going to school for my undergrad. I ended up staying for 10 years and learned quite a bit about myself and the world being in Europe for that long. Did come back to the States in 2000, as you mentioned, when the market was crashing. And didn't really know what to do, but then decided, well, why not go to grad school? So I ended up going to San Diego State and got my MBA in taxation. While I put myself through graduate school, I was a single mother, struggled quite a bit, and worked for a local CPA, trying to decide which direction do I want to go with my MBA.
How many kids do you have?
I have two of my own who are 18 and 15, and then I have three stepsons.
So when you were a single mom, you were what...
29.
Yeah, 29.
It was quite a struggle, and that was the real reason why I decided to start my own business back in 2006, was I was working a lot of hours and taking care of children, going to graduate school, and it's a struggle as any parent or any individual, but as a single parent, it's very difficult. And so one day I just decided I need to take a leap of faith and start my own business, and then I could make my own hours, so I would get up at 3 in the morning and work from 3 to 6 in the morning and then get my kids off to school, and then I'd go back into the office about 7:30, 7:45 after I dropped them off, and would work until they were done at 3:30. So okay. Just really tried to make my own way.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know how you do it. I've been fortunate enough that my wife pretty much took care of the kids as I worked, which the old-fashioned way, I
right.
guess. And I don't know how single parents do it. I really don't.
One day at a time. That's it. That's all you can
do. I know
do.
Even myself, having being married, and I still even struggle, even though I have a huge support system, I understand and can't relate as much as you can being a single parent, but I do relate to having the responsibilities of the family and business.
Yeah, everybody has their challenges. And so I've had my own business now for almost 9 years. I am an enrolled agent, which is a tax professional.
Tell us a little bit more about what an enrolled agent really is and does.
Well, a lot of people don't know what enrolled agents are, so that is a good question. We are the only federally licensed tax practitioners who specialize in taxation. And we also have unlimited rights to represent taxpayers before the IRS. Now, this profession, it actually dates back to 1884, but most people don't know about us. A lot of people...
That was just a year or two before I was born.
Don't be silly. But enrolled agents, honestly, we specialize in taxation. So... whereas a CPA and attorneys and enrolled agents all can represent before the IRS, enrolled agents are required to demonstrate to the IRS the competence in all areas of taxation, representation, and ethics before they're given that unlimited representation right.
Is there any sort of, I don't know, college courses or preparation for this?
Not necessarily. However, you do have to pass a comprehensive examination. It used to be 4 parts when I took it. Now it's 3 parts. It is strictly taxation, whereas CPAs, they do take a rigorous examination, but only one part of the examination is in taxation.
All I know is that if it's accounting, one part would have to be vodka.
You also can become an enrolled agent if you work for the IRS for 5 years, but I didn't want to do that.
So then the difference between an enrolled agent and a CPA then is mostly, like you mentioned, the focusing on the taxation part of...
Correct. Okay. Correct. And CPAs, they are state licensed, and they may or may not choose to specialize in taxes, whereas all enrolled agents, we specialize in taxation.
Is there a difference in cost between you and a CPA?
It depends. I honestly don't know the pricing, but I would say that probably enrolled agents are fairly cheaper.
You don't know the pricing of CPA, you mean?
I know what my rates are, but you would have to talk with any tax professional that you talk with regarding their rates.
Okay.
Okay, so why don't you share with us the top 5 tax planning tips that you suggest between now and the end of the year?
Well, it's the beginning of the school year for all those with children. So I would say it's a really good time to start getting organized, because a lot of people start thinking, okay, January, it's time to get all my tax stuff together. But in the fall, it's a really good time to start thinking about, okay, how much have I earned so far this year? Look at your budget. Look at your withholding for the year so far so that you can actually start planning. Because if you start planning right before the holidays, it's really hard to make some decisions. Those year-end decisions the last 2 weeks of the year go really quickly. So I would say it really depends if you're employed or if you're self-employed, what sort of tips I would give you. So for instance, if you're a self-employed individual, I'd say get your books in order now. If you haven't actually balanced your checkbook since January, you probably should do that right about now.
That must be why the checks are bouncing.
Exactly. It's not a good time to start getting your books together in January because you can't make any decisions. You can't spend money. Self-employed individuals really need to look at their profit and loss statement at this time of year and look at how much have I spent so much this so far this year? How much have I brought in revenue so far this year? Can I invest in assets? If you are an employee, have I maximized all my employer benefits? For instance, if you have what they call a Section 125 or a cafeteria plan, talk to your HR department. Find out, do they offer dependent care? Do they offer 401k? Are you taking advantage of all those benefits? Because your employers have things in place that can help you save money on your taxes. And right now would be the time to think about that rather than waiting until December 15th.
You know what? I did a little research on your background, and you've got something in there that is very interesting to me.
What is that?
And that is that you train for triathlons. I don't know if it's while you're growing tomatoes, but something to do with triathlon and tomatoes, TNT.
Right, exactly.
Let's explain what that's all about.
Well, it's really important, I think, to take time for yourself every day. And it's hard because the world moves so fast and we all are busy as professionals or parents. And it's really important for me to take that time in the early morning. I always get up really early and I do train for different races. And when I get back from this training, I always water my tomatoes. That's just my little routine in the morning. And we actually have chard and basil and cucumbers. And
oh, you
plant.
So you
we've
have,
expanded.
You have something besides tomatoes now.
Yes, we do. And I did a marathon. I did the 3-day last year. I'm always out moving and training for some sort of a race.
Do you have a best time for the triathlon?
It depends on which one.
Which is your best one?
Well, the latest race that I did the Triple Crown, which is a series of 3 half marathons. I did that last year. And my best time was Carlsbad. I did 2 hours and 14 minutes.
And then how long does it take you to recover from that?
About a week.
It would take me all year.
I'm not really fast. It's slow and steady wins the race, I think.
All right. Well, I also found something else out on your background, that you speak German.
I do.
Okay. And is that for business purposes? And does that help you with business? Or is there something else going on there?
Well, I did go to school in Europe. As I said, I went over when I was 16 years old, and I was an exchange student and then ended up back in Europe when I was 19. And
in Germany?
In Germany. I lived in Munich, and I did go to the University of Munich there and learned German one word at a time. I knew no German when I moved over to Europe, but it was an adventure for sure.
So, Rachel, I know you've been featured in the Winner Circle of Buffini & Company's magazine. So could you share with us your experience in working with outside consultants or building your business?
I built my business by word of mouth or by referral. When I left the CPA, when I was working with him, I had 10 clients and joined the Carlsbad Chamber and just started talking to all the different professionals there and about their experience in business, because I found I was very good at doing taxes, but I wasn't very good at running a business. And so really spent a lot of time talking with other business owners, taking them to lunch, taking them to a coffee, asking them what are your best business tips, how do you balance your work versus family, and it became this natural thing where I developed relationships, and that's really what Buffini teaches, is to get to know the people who you're going to be working with and get to know them as people and as individuals, and they will refer to you. And I really love people. I think everyone has a story. I love hearing the stories. And that's what, you know, why I love doing taxes, not necessarily because I love taxes or I love to fight with the IRS, which I do. But I really love...
Just be careful about the emails.
Yes. but I really like to talk to people, because the tax return is really just the paper, the end result. It's not I mean, that's what everyone needs is the tax return because the government requires it. But I like to talk about people about what are your dreams? What are your goals? What, you know, what gets you out of bed every day? Why? I mean, why? What are you doing here on this planet? What's your purpose? And really working with them to look at how can I help save them money so that they can spend more of that money doing the things that they love to do.
So it's not just the numbers, it's the relationship.
Absolutely not. I mean, I'm great at doing the numbers, but that's not what gets me to the tax office for sure.
I'm curious, how long did it take you to build up your business?
It took me, I started in 06, and by 2010, I had 600 clients.
Well, that's fantastic. So you were finally able to support your children in the style that they would like.
Yes, my daughter's leaving for college in 3 weeks.
Where's she going to school?
She's going to Cal Poly at San Luis Obispo.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's my alma mater.
I'm very excited for her, and we have saved enough money to send her there, so that's definitely a win.
Okay, so if someone wants to contact you, how do they get a hold of you?
You can check out our website. It's elmtax.com. That's E-L-M, like the tree. Or you could call our office at 760-730-1817.
Why don't you give that number one more time?
760-730-1817.
Okay. Well, thanks again for being here.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Catherine.
Thanks, Rachel.
It was a pleasure.
When we return from the next break, we will share with you a way that some people can get rich investing. You'll want to hear all about it. So stay tuned and savvy up.
You're a successful woman. You have a great job. Perhaps you're married. You're probably putting money into a retirement plan like a 401k or IRA. You have an investment account that you have on autopilot. Your monthly statements pile up in the corner and get put into a computer file never to be seen again, except maybe around tax time. If this describes you, then it's time to take a second look at what's going on with your investments. Bring that pile of stuff that includes your investment statements, your retirement plan info, your tax returns, and the rest of your financial information, and let us at Savvy Women Wealth Management take a second look at it. With a certified financial planner and many years of experience under our belts, we can take an objective look at how you're situated as far as your financial goals are concerned. We know that all of us spend hours and hours planning our vacations. Let's take as much time to plan our future wealth. Look us up at SavvyUp.com. That's SavvyUp.com. Or give us a call at 760-692-5700 and set up a 30-minute consultation. Savvy Up!
A man named George Adair uttered the following quote, "Everything you've ever wanted is on the other side of fear." Wow, how powerful are those words?
We've all experienced the fear of the unknown. For some, it's easy to conquer, but for many, fear can be debilitating. We at Savvy Woman Wealth Management have witnessed many women who knew they needed to learn about financial matters, but were honestly afraid they would not be able to understand it, so they never started.
They just kept putting it off, and then one day, they were alone. No husband, no significant other. That's when the panic sunk in.
If that sounds like you, it's time to take control. Investing is not rocket science. Start your journey by looking us up at SavvyUp.com. Sign up for one of our next events. Our goal is to enlighten and empower women of all ages.
We believe in education, planning, and the discipline to stick with the plan. Let us show you how. Visit SavvyUp.com to learn more. That's SavvyUp.com. If you take the first step, we'll help you finish the race. Savvy Up. Welcome back to the Savvy Women Show. I'm Steve Wolf with my partner, Catherine Magana, and we are with Savvy Women Wealth Management. And really, we're going to be spending the next few minutes talking about one of my favorite topics, and that's dividend investing. I think this is one of the best ways to invest because, you know, if you do it right, if it's really done properly, you can get a raise in your income pretty much every year. I mean, think about that for just a second. Your income pretty much goes up every year, and that is what I love about investing in companies whose dividends grow year after year. It means your income is growing year after year. Although I really do like this strategy in pretty much any investing environment, right now it is especially sweet when interest rates are as low as they are today, because if you're going to try to get some money on a CD or a bond, it's just not there. So now before I get more into this topic, please understand this is not a sales pitch to invest in stocks. Only you and your financial advisor should decide what you should be invested in. You also need to know that stocks are volatile and obviously any one company can go broke, but it's highly unusual for a stock that raises its dividend every year to go out of business. Having said that, let's talk a little bit about dividend growth investing. Let's discuss what a dividend is and how you can profit by it and maybe get rich.
So companies such as Pepsi or Home Depot or GE earns a profit. The board of directors, who are elected by the stockholders, who are the owners of the company, meet with the management of the company, and after listening to the recommendation of management, they then decide how much of that profit should go back into the growth of the company, how much should be used to pay off debt, how much should be put back into the company's own stock, and how much they should pay to the owners, which we just said are the stockholders of that particular company. The amount they decide to give to the owners is what is known as a dividend. Now, there are different types of dividends that companies can give you, but for this discussion, we'll limit it to cash dividends. So let's just say, hypothetically, you own 100 shares of IBM, and let's say those shares when IBM was at $100. So, for example, you paid $10,000 for those shares. Now, again, hypothetically, let's say that the management of IBM decides that each shareholder should receive $2 annually for each share that you own. So that means that you'd receive $200 in dividends from IBM because you have 100 shares and you're getting $2 per share.
Okay. And then to figure out the yield that you're getting, you take the dollar amount you're getting in dividend payments and divide that by the amount you paid for the stock. So in this hypothetical case, you received $200 in dividends, you paid $10,000 for the shares, so that would come out to a 2% yield. You know, it's a big deal, right? You know, that doesn't sound so great in and of itself until you realize that many companies raise that dividend every year. And historically, many raise their dividends by more than the rate of inflation, which, of course, is a good goal to have. I get really excited about this topic because investing in companies that raise their dividend every year is an old, tried, and really true method of accumulating wealth over time. As a matter of fact, I manage a portfolio whose objective is to own companies that increase their dividends every year. So again, there are many companies that pay dividends to their owners. It's a little like getting a rent check every quarter, quarter after quarter, year after year. And the kicker is the rent check usually goes up every year, and you don't even have to worry about the plumbing.
Well, unless you own shares of Home Depot or Lowe's.
That's true. Well, while I was doing some research on this subject for this radio show and the Savvy Women listeners, I came across an article in Money News that had been written back in July of 2011, but it has the same significance today. And I have to tell you, the real-life examples the author gives about dividends and reinvesting dividends are just startling.
So in these particular cases, the results came about by reinvesting the dividends into more shares of the company's stock. So in other words, instead of taking the cash dividends, you tell the company to reinvest the cash and buy more shares of the company with no commissions involved. The author Tom Hutchinson gave the following real-life true examples of what I call miracle of reinvesting dividends. The first one involves Johnson & Johnson, a company that pretty much everybody knows and uses their products. If you purchase 200 shares of Johnson & Johnson on July 1st, 1980, that investment would be about $15,750. And just reinvested all the dividends without ever adding any new money, that position would be worth approximately $888,000 in July of 2011. So that would be a 5,537% return. That's worth a lot more than today.
It's worth more today than it was then.
That's what I meant.
Okay. But to put this investment another way, it would be like buying a house in 1980 for $157,500 that in 2011, 31 years later, is worth about $8.9 million. Now, home values did not appreciate anywhere near that much. That is the power of growing dividends. Similarly, a 2,000 share or roughly $26,000 investment in Pepsi back in 1990 would have grown to around $839,000 in July of 2011 with reinvested dividends. Again, imagine buying a $260,000 house in 1990 that is worth about $8.4 million 31 years later.
Those are some compelling numbers. So not every stock that pays dividends will end up this nicely, and there's always the risk of losing principal or a company not paying a dividend. But with Johnson & Johnson and Pepsi as examples, many of these companies have been around for a very long time, and it's hard to say that these are anomalies.
Yeah, I mean, it really happens all the time, which is one of the reasons that I like investing in this particular type of category. So let's hear it for Johnson & Johnson. You know, I think I'm stuck on Band-Aids now. Anyway, let's look at a company that is really popular around the San Diego area, and that's Qualcomm. Pretty much everyone around here has heard of Qualcomm. It started paying out a dividend to shareholders back in the year 2003. And at that time, they paid 9 cents a share annually. Today, they're paying $1.68 per share on an annual basis. Now, that's an increase of about 18 times, about 18 and a half times. And that increase far outpaces inflation. And please understand that the dividend is not determined by the price of the stock. Sometimes people seem to think that. The dividend is determined by the cash flow of the company. So even when Qualcomm dropped 50% in price from around $60 per share in 2008 to $30 per share in 2009, when the markets crashed, the dividend went from 60 cents to 66 cents, or an increase of about 10%. So the stock fell by 50% and the dividend rose by 10%.
Okay, so let's take one more example. Let's look at Verizon. This is not a fast-growing company like Qualcomm has been, but it is a slow, steady grower. The stock price has moved up from about $33 per share back in 2003 to around $48 per share today. But the dividend has grown from $1.54 per share in 2003 to about $2.12 annually today. So that dividend has grown about 38% over the last 11 years.
Now, remember, these numbers on Qualcomm and Verizon are just the dividends alone. We haven't even mentioned what the stock prices did in that period between 2003 and today, which of course includes one of the worst stock market crashes in history. In the case of Qualcomm, the stock was in around the $20 area in 2003, and before we came into the studio today, it was close to $80. That's approximately a 400% increase. Now, for Verizon, the price in 2003 was around $34 per share, and today it's around $49 per share. So the stock price went up by about 44% in that 11-year time frame. But if you combine the increase in the stock price with the increase in the dividend, you get a really nice total return for the past 11 years. Now, obviously, we cannot guarantee what will happen to either dividends or stock prices in the future, but we like this type of investing and think it makes a lot of sense. We could go on and on about investing in companies that grow their dividends, but I think for now we'll stop. If you want to learn a little bit more about what I'm doing with my dividend income portfolio, or if you want us to take a look at what your portfolio looks like, send me an email at steve@savvyup.com. That's S-T-E-V-E, Steve, at SavvyUp, SavvyUp.com. Or give a call to our office at 760-692-5700, and we'll be glad to help you.
So hopefully you found those that information helpful today. Once again, the purpose of our Savvy Woman show is to educate women about investing and all different types of financial-related topics. So once again, we don't want you to be an expert, but we want to be able to teach you and make sure that you make well-informed decisions for yourself and your families. And hopefully we're providing an opportunity for you to do that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it seems to me that people are really looking today to have an increase in their income. Remember, you're going to live on your income. Hopefully, you're not going to be living off of any of the principal. So when you have something that is steady and what I think is fairly conservative, I mean, the stocks like Johnson & Johnson and GE and General Motors or whatever.
But I think what we like about that is that people know those companies, they understand them, they've heard about them for years. I think it's a lot of investors like some well-established companies in their portfolios.
And that's true. And most of the companies that we have in our portfolio are those types of companies. But we do find some that are a little bit smaller. Most people really do know who they are. But even if they don't, they're high-quality, solid companies. So we're looking for those companies that continue to grow dividends. And once they stop growing those dividends, then what we're going to do is we're going to take them out of the portfolio. So if you'd like more information, reach me at SavvyUp.com or give us a call, 760-692-5700. Now, what I'd like for Catherine to do is give a little preview as to what some of our next upcoming events are.
Sure. Our next Savvy Woman Invest on Purpose workshop is going to be on Wednesday, September 25th at 5:30. We still have a few spots left, so give us a call at 760 602-692-5700. That's 760-692-5700 to reserve your spot today. And you can also find a list of our upcoming events at our website at savvyup.com. And once again, for those of you wondering what the workshop's about, these are events that are fun gatherings for women to come together and talk about our natural strengths as women and how to use those strengths to managing our money. We actually provide some tips for you on how to find the right relationship with an investment advisor, somebody you feel comfortable with, somebody you trust. So we hope you can join us. Please give us a call and sign up for our next event at 760-692-5700.
You know, we just had an event here recently, and there were, what, about seven or eight women who were there?
Yes.
Because we don't want this to be big. We don't want it to be more than about 10 people.
It's an intimate gathering because we come together, and it's just a chance for us to connect as women and really share our experiences. And a lot of women are at different phases of their lives, and the more we share and communicate with each other, the more we learn from each other.
Okay. Well, here's something now that has become something that we want to do every week. And Catherine usually will have some sort of a quote by someone, and usually she surprises me. So today, who's the quote by?
Okay, so today we have Phyllis Diller, and we have, "The reason women don't play football is because 11 of them would never wear the same outfit in public."
And that sounds like Phyllis Diller, all right.
Probably a true statement for a lot of us women.
Anyway, well, thanks again for all the listeners who have been here. And next week, we're going to have Barbara Stanny, who is the daughter of R. Block from H&R Block, and she's going to really tell us about her gut-wrenching story about what happened to her, and also that women who have to take care of themselves. But for now, let us leave you with knowledge is power. For successful investing, never stop learning, and savvy up.